This episode of Make More Music is sponsored by the Tech Nook, a collaborative technology resource created by music therapy clinicians, researchers, and educators to learn how to record, produce, edit, and create content. Tutorial videos, PDFs, guides, and all kinds of stuff, including the three modules I was a part of creating, are all live on technook.co, and you can follow them on Instagram at @mt_technook. Now, on with the show. Hey, music makers, welcome back to Make More Music, the podcast connects you to music and one another. My name's Chris. I'm a board-certified music therapist, and I am happy to share with you the last two episodes of the season. Lots of cool things going on. I am getting ready to go on season break, so the next episode, I have a Q&A lined up for you with a lot of cool resources. I have a few bonus episodes that I'll sprinkle. But I'll be taking a social media hiatus. If you see anything on our Instagram at make.more.music, it'll all be pre-programmed stuff that is just dropping while I'm away. So if you do want to reach out to me, you can hit me up on email at makemoremusicpodcast@gmail.com. Lots of really cool things coming for season three. Also, two new music shout-outs at the end of this episode, which are really fun. They're both from a couple of my friends. One of my friends from Orlando, who's actually on a previous episode, Elijah DaCosta. Their band that he shouted out, Office Hours, has their new single that dropped, so I have a preview of that. And my good buddy from high school, Drew Sharon, just dropped a solo album, and it's like prog rock-ish kind of thing. So I'm going to give you two little sneak peeks, and in the show notes will be information about how to find that music. But today I'm really excited to share with you the conversation with my buddy Matt. Matt has transitioned from a guy that, you know, I met as a freshman at college, and we joined a fraternity together, and we stayed good friends. He was one of the groomsmen in my wedding, and, you know, moving back to Kentucky last year, we've reconnected quite a bit. We talk about some cool ups and downs and being able to coordinate music therapy for his dad before he passed away. But the really cool thing is during quarantine, my friend decided that he was going to start writing music. He gets all into this, but long story short, him and I don't know if that's correct English or not, but we're putting out an album. They're his songs that I've kind of helped doing my first serious producing to get this DIY recording out there. So hopefully we're crossing our fingers and shooting for Halloween. If not, just follow all the pages, our Instagram, his Instagram, and you'll know when it comes out. But it's going to be great. It's sounding really good so far. We're finishing up tracking, moving over to mixing, and shipping it out to the world. So today's interview is with the newly minted artist, M.W. Hale, and his upcoming album, Sorrowed Son, on Make More Music. Before we get in this transition of, like, a random friend who's now, we're, like, this duo making music together.
Yeah.
Pull open your phone. We're going to do rapid fire. What's the last song you listened to?
All right.
What service? You like Spotify, Apple Music?
I do Apple Music. I don't know. I'm about to say something real dumb. I've never really learned anything how to use Spotify, and so it intimidates me, so I just keep with Apple Music.
It's the same exactly.
As it's what it's they the say, same. But I don't know. Looks like Some Days by Sturgill is the last song I listened to.
Nice.
On my way here, actually.
Yes, I've been listening to a whole lot of Sturgill.
High
just
top
getting
mountain,
ready.
For
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, just getting ready. I feel like we're channeling a lot of those vibes, and that's going to be what I mix reference to, I think.
Yeah.
So that would be cool.
Really good guitar player, so it's worth it.
I want you to get as philosophical as you can. If you were an instrument, what would you be?
Oh, man. An instrument.
What type of instrument? And if you want to get specific,
man, maybe a baby grand piano.
Okay, why piano?
Because they're big and beautiful, and they take over a room.
But baby grand, so that you don't take over an entire
room.
Not
the entire room.
Yeah. Okay. I like it. So I would love to command a space, but just a little bit.
Just my little corner of my space. Yeah,
that's good. I know you just got transitioned back into doing work stuff, but so I don't know if it's that or something that's going on. You know, our city's going through a lot of really ugly times right now. So what is something that's been inspiring you?
Inspiring me? Well, you know, getting back to work has been nice because I got furloughed there for a long time. Mm-hmm. So that's been kind of a nice thing to focus on and get back to. And then just, well, I guess what we're going to talk about here in a little bit, really, yeah. You know, has always been exciting every time you send something new or we work on something new, or like a couple weeks ago when we had Zach down.
That was super fun.
To add some stuff in. So pretty much those two things have been encompassing my whole life. So
that's good. Yeah. I feel like the gears are moving slowly, but I'm trying to get this bad boy out as soon as I can.
Well, I do have you playing like 9 instruments, so
it is what it is. Yeah,
and then mixing it, and then doing everything else. So it's like, I can't imagine why you haven't finished it yet.
And then there's, you know, the looming stress of, because of all of those things, I'm going to put it out there in the world, and I have to make sure it's good because I'm doing so many things. I can't blame it on somebody else.
I know you put that title out and your name's written on like 10 times. And I'm like, look at it. Yeah, he really is doing everything.
Okay. So you just made these awesome ribs. I don't know if it's cooking. I don't know if it's something else in your life. What's a pro tip or a hack that can change somebody's life that you do?
Oh. Easy. Always put aluminum foil on your pans when you're cooking, and never do dishes ever. It's ridiculous to not do that.
I mean, it's still, you still get a little bit of mess, just but the amount is,
get the extra wide heavy duty Reynolds wrap. It's got to be name brand. I know it's a little more expensive. Get the big wings coming off the
but you're not
tray.
Trying to do dishes.
I ain't
so
doing
you
know? No yeah. No no pans.
That's good. Go-to junk food.
Oh, man. I thought of a really funny joke that I was going to say, but then I'm not going to say it. I was going to say Ortolan. Do you know what Ortolan is?
I don't even know what is it?
It's that delicacy that, like, you have to eat with a napkin over your head because it's that little bird that you eat, like, all at once. You never heard of that?
What? Why does a napkin have to be on your head?
Because it's like a thing of shame. It's actually illegal in a lot of countries. It's a baby bird. It's an Ortolan bird, and they overfeed it, and then they... Oh, we can cut this part out.
I don't know. This is pretty great.
They drown it in brandy, and then they cook it, and you eat it whole in one bite.
Like, and you wear a shame napkin.
And you have to put a napkin on your head and eat it in shame, basically.
They sell that in America?
They do, yeah.
And you still have to wear a napkin? Well, I don't understand.
It's
the
kind
napkin.
Of a whole
the
ritual. It's thing. A ritual thing. It's all a part.
Can you
like,
get that in Louisville?
I don't know about Louisville. I know you can do it in like New York and stuff. But then like Anthony Bourdain has a thing that he did it.
Is it illegal?
I don't know. It's definitely frowned upon. Okay. It's not something you're supposed to brag about. Like, it's definitely not a junk food.
Oh yeah. Okay, I see what you're saying. Okay, what's an actual junk food?
The peanut butter pretzels, the complete opposite. Mm-hmm. But I will eat peanut. I'll eat a whole.
The little square things.
Yeah. I'll eat a whole container of those.
Those
like
are really good. The Costco size things.
Yes, it doesn't matter. I will eat those all day, every day.
Those are good.
Over cake or anything.
I'm not as crazy about pretzels, but I love peanut butter.
I don't know why. Yeah, I will eat a whole jar of peanut butter with a spoon if I'm not careful too.
Man, crunchy or smooth?
Smooth, natural smooth.
Mm. See, it's got to be Jif. I like crunchy a lot.
Has to be Jif.
Man, all this name brand stuff. What a lifestyle. Lastly, somebody doing something cool, a person, a project, or an organization that you want to give a shout at.
Well, is it weird if it's you?
That's only the second time that's happened, so that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that, I mean, that, and we kind of talked about our buddy Palmer's business. I like what they're doing.
Oh, yeah, go ahead and tell them about the name of it and everything.
Yeah, it's called Letters from Afar, and it's him and his wife, Shawnee. They run this company where they send out monthly letters, like a subscription service, and it's an educational tool for homeschooling, I think, a lot, and then also just... They travel a lot, and so they get to write about it and make it educational. So
and it's from like a character's perspective, right?
Yeah.
From like
Isabel?
The 1800s or something like that?
I think Isabel is the name of the character.
Or like turn of the century.
Palmer got her tattooed on his back. That's what
he's gonna pee his pants that we just talked about. Probably him will. On a recorded thing.
And then, but no, it's really cool. I went to go see them a few weeks ago, and they just moved into like an office space, and they
see the whole production.
And so they're
line.
Like they're like really growing rapidly, and it's pretty.
Is
awesome.
It them too, or do they have anybody else?
Just them too, but they recently started with some part-time people to help with letters because they're still hand stuffing and hand. Stamping all the letters, and it's
part of that rustic feel,
and it's a ton of them. Yeah. And it looks really cool. And then they got, you know, another part of it is it's called the Yesteryear Gazette, and it's like on this day in history type newspaper type thing, and so it's another educational tool that they've got going for that. So it's pretty cool.
All right, the Grigsby's.
I know.
All right, there you go. Wow, he's putting that history degree to use.
Well, I know. Yeah, there you go. More than I'm doing with my degree. So.
Fair enough. Palmer, we love you. All right. I want you to take me back. I know a lot about your personal history, but I feel like it'll be cool to hear you flesh it out. When you go way back to some of your earliest musical memories and what was influential to you growing up,
yeah,
what was the music that was around you? Who was inspiring you? When did you start playing instruments, and what did that look like?
My first musical memories would have to be... Every night, my father would play us to sleep with a guitar. He'd come in and sing songs, but he'd always sing the same five or six songs.
Yeah.
And they were all John Prine songs.
Great.
And so we just, I heard Sam Stone my entire life, and I didn't know what
Not
Sam,
an appropriate
I,
song
I had
to
no
sing a
idea
child
what
asleep.
That song was about until I was probably 20.
Popped your last balloon.
But
and
knew,
right
knew all the words to it at like four. And then Paradise was a huge song.
That's a good one.
And then Please Don't Bury Me, and all, pretty much all of them. That's good. All of them, especially from the first album.
That is a masterpiece.
Yeah. And so that was probably the earliest. Of course, like church hymns and stuff too, because when you go to growing up and then Catholic school, then you've got music class, and so you're basically memorizing all the hymns and stuff.
Yeah.
And then I don't know what year I started. But we took piano lessons pretty much my whole childhood.
All the boys?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, Alicia and Chris, everybody, yeah. And so...
I always forget that there's girls in there.
They weren't in the fraternity, so...
yeah. Frat bros.
But I know when I stopped when I was 14. I want to say it was at least 8 years of piano lessons. It was a long time. I definitely wasted all my mom's money with that because I don't remember much of it at all. In the sixth grade, I joined band and played the saxophone for a year. And I really wish I knew who Clarence Clemons was when I was doing that, because I probably
would have cared.
I would have. Yeah, I would have stayed with it instead of playing, Three Blind Mice over and over again on saxophone. I could have figured it out.
If you just push it out for a couple of years.
Yeah. It would have been a little more interesting. But, they were gearing you up for marching band, which I guess still would have been good at or good to do. But
I don't know. I don't want to say I regret it. But if I was going to go back, I wouldn't have done it.
I don't know if I would have done it because we didn't have a marching band in my middle school. But going into high school, you would have done it. But I don't know. It would have made me a better musician. I kind of wish I went back and did drums of some sort. I feel like I have like rhythm, but like anytime I sit down at a drum set, it seems like I am just lost and I have no idea. And I would really like to be able to do that.
It's like that rub your tummy, pat your head thing.
Yeah.
Trying to get your arms and legs to do things together.
But then, when I was about 12, I wanted to learn how to play guitar, and I remember going to my dad and asking him to teach me because he had always played his stuff, and he said yeah, sure. And then the next day he came back and he handed me this like computer CD instructional thing. It was Esteban's way to teach you how to play guitar or whatever.
Those infomercials.
Yeah. And so it was this giant thing with all these chords and stuff in it. I'm 12 years old just looking at it, and I'm like, no, I want you to teach me how to play.
Come on, Dad.
And he's like, no, I want you to be better than me. So I need you. This is how, like, you actually learn how to play guitar.
I need you to play like Esteban.
I was like, I know, right? He wanted me to like pick and like know all the notes, which I guess looking back, I really kind of messed up on. But I remember putting in the first CD and like the Esteban comes up and he starts talking and I'm like, I'm out.
Zorro teaching you guitar.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I'm done with this. And so then I didn't do anything. And then when I was 14, I was like, all right, I'm gonna play this. I'm gonna figure this out. And so they bought me three lessons at the music store that had opened up in Springfield.
Cool.
And but they were expensive. I think they were like $50 a piece. So it was expensive. It was $150 total. But I remember we went to the first one, and the guy, we sit down, and he's like, these notes, these are the frets and stuff, and if you hit this, this, and this, you'll play Sweet Home Alabama or something.
Great.
So I did that, and I was like, okay. Well, that took like 30 seconds to learn. And then I go back the next week, and he's like, teach me another thing. And I'm like, I just want to know the chords, man. Just like, I don't care. Like, just, I don't know. I want to know how to play a song. Like, that's all I want to do. Like, I'll figure this stuff out later. And I remember walking out of that lesson. Like, I'm not coming back for this third one unless, that just is ridiculous. I can't keep doing this, even though I definitely should have learned to play, like, watching you now. It's like, I definitely should have learned to play it better. But I remember walking out and, everybody was always hanging out there, and there was this guy, his name was Joe Grigsby, was sitting there, and he was playing a song, and he was playing chords, and I just remember walking up
That's
and
what
like,
I want.
Like, just teach me that song and those four chords. That's all I want to know. You just teach me that song. And the song was Collide by Howie Day. I still remember it.
That's good.
And the chords were just, G, D, C, and E minor, and I learned that, and I was like, all right, this is it.
Thousands of songs unlocked.
Got it. I'm done. Took that guitar. I went straight from there to my buddy Brady's house. My friends were there. And I was like, I just learned this. Super excited. Here we go.
Here's some Howie Day, man.
Here's some Howie Day. I know everybody's been headbanging Howie Day these days. And so I play it and they get down. And they're just like, all right, we're going to go like watch TV now or something. I was like, well, that went great. My first show went really, really well.
Shred.
Yeah. But, then from there, just kept playing. That's really easy to learn John Prine songs if you only know those four chords.
What did you like as a teenager at that time? Were you still into that kind of stuff, or what were you into?
All I ever wanted to do was play John Prine songs with my dad. That's all I ever wanted to pick it up for to do.
Yeah,
I didn't think I'd pick it up and get tons of women from it or something ridiculous. Like, just flowing in. I just wanted to play
Take a Number, Please.
John Prine songs with my dad. That's all I wanted to do. And so then I just kept playing more and more.
Yeah.
And like found in chord, songs with chords on them online and printing out the sheets and making these big old books and just going through
them. Having your little library.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And then just doing that. And then, going to college and playing a little more, and then just continuing to find better rhythms and flows with how I want to play the songs. And but still, I maybe know 15 chords, and like I couldn't tell you what key we're ever in at all. And so I just play whatever my voice sounds to, and then whatever sounds good to me, and that's about it.
It's usually the first chord is what key you're in.
Well,
but when you throw that capo in the
mix.
Well,
as I say, I play a lot of capos, and so that's when it really throws me off. Like when Barker was complaining about the C sharp.
Yeah,
like, I wish I knew we were even in C sharp. I wouldn't have done this.
Sorry, dude. Well, so you have gone through all of this stuff with having the furlough, and like you said, you've always just kind of had this thing. I play guitar. I have fun with it. What made you decide to make this leap into writing all of these songs?
Yeah. And I had written things before for like girlfriends and stuff, but they were all cheesy and I hated.
And trash.
I even hated them when I wrote them because they were always just straightforward. And it was always like, your eyes are green. You know what I mean? jelly beaned. I mean, like, there's nothing like creative.
TV screen.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing like descriptive or like,
it's like, why do I sound more creative like Dr. about Seuss?
It? I'm just reading your driver's license at this point. And so, like, there's not, you know, much to it. So I never, and so I would do that, like, I don't know, like every 2 years or something. But they were always terrible. And then so we were, I was working from home, and we were just doing video conference after video conference.
It was in March.
Yeah. And I was just brain dead. And, like, it was ridiculous. And every day was the same. Just wake up and go to the office, my office in my house, and just sit on a video call for 2 hours and then hop off for an hour and get on another one and get back and forth, back and forth. And it was like 2 weeks of this. And one day we're in the middle of one and I just zoned out. I was like, I am not listening to this. We're not even talking about anything. And I just wrote down like a sentence and then, I don't know, kind of blacked out. And 30 minutes later, there was three verses and three choruses sitting there. And I was like, well, that was weird. And these verses or these words aren't that bad. And so I went.
This is not Your Eyes Are Green. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's Jelly not, Bean TV screen.
And so I went and grabbed a guitar and just kind of played it out. And I was like, well, that sounds fun. Let me just record that on my phone real quick. And I'm trying to remember which one was first. I have a good inclination. I'm pretty sure it's because I've got it saved here when I did it. But. Yeah, the I Found song. That was March 31st. And so then the next day, I was like, well, that was fun. Let me see if I can do that again. And so sat through a whole day of awful calls and then got to the end of the day, wrote down one sentence. 30 minutes later, there was three verses and two choruses. And I was like,
so a very stream of consciousness, though.
I have no idea. Like most of the time, I'd play it like a week later and I'd be like, why the hell did I even write this?
Very like beat poetry.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so I did that like 3 days in a row, or 4 days in a row. And I was like, well, this is fun. And then I started sending them to our friend Zach. And I was like, hey, I got really bored yesterday and I wrote this song. Yeah. You want to hear it? And he's like,
also
going to
pee
like,
his
that's
pants. Also going to pee his pants. So yeah. Shouted him out.
And so I was like, do you want to hear this? He's like, that's pretty good. And I was like, yeah, cool. And so then I sent him some other ones. And then I was boosting my ego at that point. And then I sent some to Palmer. And then, like, it was the weekend, so I just didn't do anything. I was almost at that point, like, treating it like a job. And then
I got to wait till Monday.
And then Monday comes around. I sit back down and go through another awful day of calls. Finish that day up. Same thing happens. Write one sentence. 30 minutes later, there's a whole thing. And then another 30 minutes of guitar playing. And then I would celebrate with a beer when I was done with it.
There you go.
I would record it once and send it out and just do that over again. And I don't want to, I hope I don't sound pretentious or douchey. This is just how it happened. I don't really have.
No, I mean, I think that.
There's no thought. Like, I think if I sat down and thought about them, I would end up writing the same old songs that
I think. Yeah. I think there's something to being, I mean, there's research about that in all kinds of fields. And I'm not saying like, oh, master craftsman, but it's just one of those things that like, it is flow state. And when you get in it, all the research says that, you know, you just do, you don't think.
Yeah.
And that's where, I mean, who is it? It's a, I think it's Hunter S. Thompson, the write drunk, edit sober.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. It's that whole idea of just like, even behind that really is the whole like idea of don't judge what you're getting out.
Yeah.
Get it out of your head. And then later we can fix things.
Yeah. And I did do that for sure. Cause some of the things I kind of made a joke to you the other day, you said, how did you write these things? And I said, eternal boredom and slight depression. Cause like, I mean, you sit there all day long and I'm usually somebody that is constantly doing something and I'm locked in my house and all I'm stuck there with is my thoughts running in a circle. And I'm like, oh, this has got to stop. There's got to be an outlet of some sort for these things. And so
And you've probably got, what, about 20 or so you've done so far?
20 or 30 of them, yeah. But at this time, I was determined to write. By this time, I had 5 or 6, and I was determined to get to 10. And I was like, I'm just going to take 10 of these first cuts.
That's probably about when you and me, I don't even know, did I text you? I don't know.
No, I got to the last song. I got to Wedding Day, and I sent it to Zach, and he was losing his mind because he thought it was hilarious. Because it's a story about a wedding that he and I went to that ended terribly for me. And he was cracking up. So I sent it to Palmer, and he was cracking up. And then Zach was like, you have to get this recorded. I need to be able to play it, like, in my Apple Music. Like, I need an actual thing. He's like, you got to send it to Chris. And so then I sent it to you. Because that's what I did. I texted you and I said, so what recording equipment would I need if I wanted to record something? Like, what app do I need? Like, what thing? And you sent me the picture of whatever that thing is.
My interface.
Interface. Yeah. And then I think you told me the app too. And then you're like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I was like, why are you asking me these questions?
And so then I send you one of the songs and you said, I don't remember what you said. But then
I think it was in the middle of the week too. I think I was sitting in bed with Taryn. I was like, I don't know what Matt's up to. What's he saying right now? I was like, he's maybe writing songs? Question mark.
And so I sent you one. You said, that's pretty good. And then I sent you another one. And I was like, yeah, I'm trying to figure out how to record inside of a piano. Because I've got this one that I play inside of a piano. And you were like, well, you need like 5 microphones and all this stuff. And I was like, oh, okay. And then you just go, do you want me to do this for you? And I was like, what? And he's like, you said the recordings of these. Do you want me to record these and produce them? And I was like, I mean, if you want to, Chris, you can. I don't really, I'll tell you right now, I'm not very intelligent of these things. I just, I can play my 4 chords and sing the songs, sure. And we can figure it out from there.
Yeah.
And then I sent them all to you. I sent you all the lyrics and everything, and then we got together and started having powwows, and then now we're here. I don't know, 4 months later, 5 months later.
Yeah, it's gone probably slower than I would want it to go, but I feel like we're getting more of what we want by taking it slow.
It's fascinating the things that you've been able to do, and then every time you send me something, I always forget how good of a musician you are. And then I'm like, well, there he is playing something he's never played. I just gave him a bass guitar, and now he's a bass player. And so
it's those James Brown licks I've been learning.
Yeah, and then you're like, I've got a drummer, and he's gonna play. His name is Michael Schmidt, and he's going to play the drums on it. And he had to send him to him. And I was like, oh, that'd be cool. And then, like, you send me a picture of his drum kit. And I'm like, oh, he's a drummer.
Yeah, real deal.
And then he sends back his recordings. And I'm like, holy crap. Like, this is...
it's turning into a thing.
This has gone, like 10 times further than I thought it was going to go. And then, of course, you tell me he's a youth pastor after he read some of the lyrics I wrote. So that that made me feel great.
Yeah, just sit with it. Sit with
it. But
yeah, I think for me too, though, as much as you feel like a novice in, you know, the songwriting process and whatever, I am basically that level of amateur with the recording. And the good thing is, like, we both have ears that go, I know what I like.
Yeah.
I know what I want to listen to. And I think being realistic, it's like, well, is it going to sound like a Sturgill Simpson record? Even if we can get 75% of the way there,
yeah,
we're doing great.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And like, yeah, I mean, I try to write in their styles. Definitely try to write in a Prine style. I will never think that anything I ever do is anywhere near
Grandmaster status.
Any of them. I mean, not even Prine at 24. You know, of course, 24 is when he wrote Sam Stone.
Which is insane.
Yeah. And so, you know, I don't ever think that. I better just try to write. I like the styles that they write in.
Yeah,
and
it's
lucky that you also like all the same artists that I like. So when I say something like, I want to sound like this song, and that's another fun thing I get to do with you, is I'm like, I wanted to go doodle-doo, boop-boo-doo. And then you're like, oh, you mean this? And then and then there it is. And I'm like, well, that's perfect. There it is.
It's good. It stretches me too, because I'm like, I'm stuck with, okay, here's your vision. Here's your idea. But then the challenge for me is like, okay, how much do I let Matt do this thing versus like kind of step into a producer role and be a little bit like, what about this?
Yeah.
And I show you like a couple of different options and just exercise. Like in my mind, I'm like, okay, we have this simple ending. What if we, you know, went to the 6, the 2, 5, we do a cool transition and then we ended there. How's that? And you've been like, yeah, that sounds way better usually.
Well,
but
I mean, it's that's the great thing about with what you do and how good you are and how knowledgeable you are with music is those are things that I don't know how to articulate, to say, you know, of what I want to do, but you know, the songs I like
and the styles
and like how they end their songs. And so it's been, that's been the probably the biggest part is we can just say, here you go, let's do this, let's do it this way. And
yeah.
And then we, you know, we just played some earlier and it's still beyond.
It's getting there. So tell me a little bit about like, cause you know, there's this stream of consciousness writing. What have you learned about yourself through these songs? Cause they go like to some very different places, some very deep places, some funny places, some telling stories. And like you said, you already hit on a lot, even the relationship with like your dad and your family. A family is kind of central to a lot of these songs.
And religion, apparently.
Yeah. I think the Holy Spirit's moving over there, man. So tell me a little bit about like what you realize through, especially this, you know, beat style, stream of consciousness. What are some of the things that jumped out at you that you didn't even think like were an issue?
Well, some are darker than you even got to hear, because I'd play them like a day later and I'd be like, oh, I can't let anybody hear.
That's
hear,
like your therapy
hear
song.
These thoughts. We're going to have to strike out a few lines here. But it was, like you mentioned, therapy. I was about to say, you know, it's therapeutic for sure. Mm-hmm. Dealing with some things that have happened in my life, and you kind of get to delve into, I don't know, just parts of your brain that you probably, I'm saying you as I'm talking about myself.
The global we.
Yeah, the royal we.
Is that a mouse in your pocket?
Yeah. And so, you know, just and working through those thoughts and things. And
what's one instance or like pull out a line that surprised you a lot? Or a verse or something.
Shoo. One line that I like on the sound is at the end, the last verse, it goes, well, now I'm blanking on my own lyrics. Of course, you ever read a song and then you forget it? Like even if you've got it written down, you can't play it like the very next day.
I think there is some psychological experience. There's got to be a phenomenon of like, it got out of my head like, and it was cathartic and now it's not going to go back because I just needed that out of my body.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
but the line, okay, I got it now. It goes, I never really figured and never really tried to try to make the most of it for the day I die, and doing something bigger might just fill with mama pride or kind of make a fool out of me. And so it's kind of a
nod to the whole thing.
Well, yeah, that, and like, you don't want to ever jump to do like bigger things, because it is always nerve-wracking and you could fail and you could look like an idiot and all these things. But you know, maybe you do succeed at it.
Yeah.
And now you're, you know, and that's how you be successful, if you do things that you've never done before.
Step out. Even if you do fail, that's not actually the problem. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so that one always sticks out with me every time I hear it or sing it. The opening of
convicting
that
a little bit, like,
yeah, and that's kind of what that whole verse is about. It goes on further to, you know,
what am I doing?
What am I doing? The chorus of that one is like, now I'm up here and I'm performing and I'm scared to death but this is literally, and it is like always been a dream. I don't know if I assumed everybody had dreams of being Bruce Springsteen. I'm learning. I don't think everybody does, but that's a dream. I like
cool a kids.
Literal dream I've always had.
Not Springsteen.
But just, you know, that's just the biggest star.
Angus Young is who I wanted to be when I was like 13. Yeah. And then it was Iron Maiden. And then it was, you know, whoever.
I just always think it's the coolest thing. Like when they're on the live albums of Springsteen, when he stops singing and like 50,000 people is screaming words that you wrote. Like that's
wild.
That's the coolest
that
thing.
That was, you know, I didn't grow up listening to country music very much. But, you know, I've grown. I really love it now.
Well, different country music.
All kinds, too. Yeah. But so Taryn obviously loved 90s country, grew up.
Oh, yeah.
90s kid, 90s country. When we went to see Garth Brooks, surprising to me, top five concert ever.
Yeah, he's showman.
Holy cannoli, he's good.
He's big and old then, fat dude running across the stage.
Yeah.
And singing for hours.
Just the same thing, though. It was the first time he had played in Florida in like 16 years or something. Yeah. Literally seeing the Amway Center like
shake.
Every person knew every word.
He doesn't even hardly sing the songs.
He just kind of stands there and watches everybody else sing his awesome songs.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's kind of that old school. He didn't write that many of those songs.
No,
you know?
No. He just...
He's the Nashville machine of...
Well,
the
it's
90s.
Like George Strait only wrote one of his 52
Alan
number
Jackson,
ones.
Yeah.
So it never, you know, you don't have to write them.
That's what Chris Stapleton does.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then he's a...
Now he's doing
his own. He needs to drop his new album already. He's only put out two of the songs, but it's been a little while for him.
I know.
But
he still plays that old school, like I can drop albums every few years.
He could drop one every month, I think. He's very good. I forgot what the question was. What I learned about myself.
Yeah.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, yeah. I guess.
but just there are some songs that aren't on this project that I've written outside of it that I really liked a lot. That kind of focus more on my childhood and... Hmm. And back home and stuff. And so those have really been, there's a lot of songs about my dad in there.
Yeah.
And references of that. So those have been a little more eye-opening than these. These I kind of wrote, I don't know, kind of like a medley album of things where, you know, like you said, every song is about a different thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
but then, you know, religion is mentioned in both of them. I don't know.
Just funny. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they're all, you know.
Well, it's
they're
not
jokes.
It's one thing I realize more as I get older is, you know, I grew up, you know, as a teenager, I thought I was 100% an atheist. And it's just funny to me that I think regardless of what people think or believe about whatever, it seems so hard to not be talking about, and to me, like yearning about what's more and what's going on, you know what
right.
I mean? Like, I think it's just natural for us as hamsters in the wheel to think what is outside of the cage.
Yeah.
So, I don't think your album in that respect is anything different per se than even just listening to anybody. It's like, they're either wrestling with it, singing it for it, be rebelling against it, you know, like,
yeah,
it seems like it's always the subject that's being brought up unless it's stereotypical sex, drugs, rock and roll,
right?
Like, it seems like there's only, like, you know, so many things to sing about.
You're right. Yeah. It's you know, how I would write them. Sometimes if I would get stuck, or like, if I want to write this type of song today, I just listen to 30 of those types of songs, because everyone writes about the same topic. It's just your different take on it.
Pull from the crock pot after you've cooked for a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Just kind of give you an idea of them. But.
Okay, cool. So tell me a little bit then about, you know, as a guy who just goes, oh, I just wrote these songs. What was it like going through production and recording and like doing, and we did it from a very DIY home recording kind of standpoint, but what was that like? You know, what did you learn along the way? What surprised you? what would you tell people who, you know, if somebody else who's just another guy that strums guitar and plays, what did you learn that you would tell somebody like that?
Yeah. Well, I, you know, I don't really like my songs. I kind of feel, I don't know, I guess because they, I write them so quickly, I feel like there's something wrong. Like I didn't put enough effort into
them. Surely
them.
That can't be
quality. And I, you know, but people tell me they enjoy them. So that's been interesting.
To hear that feedback. Yeah.
And that, and also that people enjoy the way I sound, which I didn't ever think people did, because I don't really like the way I sound. Yeah. And so that's been interesting. But like the first day when we did the recording of most of them,
we did, yeah, that
was exhausting.
Like seven of them or something. We did the scratch track.
I think I sang for six solid hours, and like we got to the end of it, and you were mixing some stuff or something, and I was just laying on the floor. And my brother comes down and he's like, what are you doing? I was like, I got to do one more. I can't get off this floor right now. And all I had done is, in my mind, all I'd done was stand and sing for 6 hours, which didn't seem like that big of a thing. But shoot, by the time we were done, I couldn't move. And I think I had to take a nap when we were done. I think I understand why all those rock stars
party and
went skiing
out
so many times in their recording studios. And so it's like I was just out of it. And so that was interesting. But then also how you've been able to, we're obviously recording all in different places. Like yes. Like in my basement, we've
done the most in
your
basement.
We've screwed carpet to walls to cut out sound.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you cut your instruments here, but then Michael cuts his in Florida, and
Barger comes,
and then
over.
We bring Barger in 3 months later to cut his, and then you're able to splice them all together. And I don't know, I do not have the patience to do that. I don't know how you're piecing them all together, but that's fascinating, for sure. But just the ability that we're able to do it, you know, during COVID, when especially in the first couple of times we could even, we were basically the only two in the room together for a long time. And so you can't all get together, and then everyone's in different states.
Especially not in Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
Can't be doing that. So,
but just that that's an option and an ability. And it's like, if you ever wanted to play
in
guitar
the 70s,
or
that wouldn't have been a thing.
I mean, but it, like, you can do all this stuff yourself. If you ever play guitar and you ever wanted to write songs that you like, you don't need to go. Well, I mean, if you have the means, then go to a studio and pay $300 an hour to have it, you know, be a professor recorded. But, you know, if we're able to do it this way, you know, anybody can do it. I mean, you can just sit down if you know four chords. And I mean, that country music's always, you know, I stick to the three chords and the truth. And that's what, you know, I won't get too deep into it, but that's what really annoys me about current country music.
You can get into it.
Because I'll rip your whole podcast up for another hour about that. But there's hardly any instruments in it. And two, I don't see any truth in anything they're saying. Mm.
But their body is like a back road.
Yeah. Yeah. She was a heartache on the dance floor. But it's, there's just nothing, there's no substance to it. And I guess that's from growing up on Prine, who is literally singing about the human condition.
Like a poet laureate.
And, and like, I'm like, well, that was music. You know, I don't know how you can just compare the two, I mean, and put them in categories like that.
Well, there's always been, you know, pop music.
Yeah. So. But it should be labeled differently. But, you know, it just doesn't make any sense. You know, Sturgill wins the Grammy for country music, our best country album of the year in 2016. 2 months later, he's not even invited to the CMAs. And he busks outside of it with his Grammy sitting there and only makes $16. And I'm like, this doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, there's a machine at play, and the machine doesn't really care about.
But I think we need more people. I'm not going to say like me, but it's more people who have things to say, like real things to say, and have the ability to play instruments and then have a friend who can record them all. It's like, well, we've talked about it several times. You know, I don't care if anybody likes this. I really don't.
Yeah.
Because one, I get to spend time hanging out with you, which we don't, you have children. I have nothing. So I just, we don't do a lot of the same activities. And so
I don't really do activities.
Exactly. So, well, not, you know, not exactly, but you know, which is different. And so, and then you moving back from Florida, it's given us a good excuse to hang out together.
Yeah.
And then like, it's something I've enjoyed doing. So if you have the access to do something you enjoy doing and you get to do it.
The same way you'd go golfing.
Yeah. Who cares if anybody likes it? You liked it. I know I've got at least three friends that'll like it.
Yeah.
And so that's all that I'm, you know, focused on. And I know that's why I always feel bad about how much work you're putting in, but you're saying you're having fun and enjoying it. So
also having fun. I mean, it's one of those like, I'm having fun, but
that coffee mug with the flames going everywhere with the little dogs, like, this is fine. With
exactly. The rims on fire. Yeah. Well, it's just one of those, like, I knew to an extent, like, I knew way more than what I knew. I was like, Matt doesn't know what is about to happen, but I was just like, you know, I've been learning all this audio engineering stuff. The only way I'm going to get better.
Yeah. Well, what have you learned during all this process?
So, you know, I'm taking in all of this stuff about tracking, and I think the main thing for me is like that I'm actually learning, especially from a guitarist standpoint, is like, how do all the sounds fit together like a glove? So I'm learning a lot about being, you know, minimal with things, because I think always my approach of growing up is like, a Wurlitzer is cool. Let's put that in there. And this is, that's cool. And it's like, you just look like a kid that's poured like six cereals in the same bowl. Or, yeah, you know, like you go to the Gaddy Town and you get the suicide drink.
You put 10 paints down. Now that it's just brown.
Exactly. And it's like, I think learning like, oh, how can we achieve this cohesion? And I mean, it's not going to be perfect. And I'm not like a perfectionist per se, but I have like some tendencies where I get like, I think that's part of the reason things have taken a while, is I get very like super hyper focused on whatever X, Y, or Z. So getting over the like, just hit record, just do the thing, yeah, you know, but also push to get it done. So I think the whole process, every bit of it is, you know, how do I deal with audio issues, or how do I mix that, or how should we record that, or do we need to re-record something, and pre-production, and also like from like helping you as a producer standpoint, it's like, how much am I helping the vision versus pushing like my idea of a vision? So it's fun. Like, I really like that we've done it as friends from the aspect of like, I think we both can be a lot more candid with, yeah, like, oh, I don't like that, or oh, I don't like that, or whatever. And also for me, just deferring to like, well, it is your thing. And it's like, I'm doing a lot of things for it, but it's like, I need to practice from my perspective, learning my perspective as, you know, recording and producing, of like, how do I serve the song, but also serve the vision of the song. So, yeah. And the whole cohesive. So I guess we've already gone for quite a while, so we never actually said like what this is.
Yeah,
I realize that. So tell people, you know, what is this project? What's your artist moniker? What's the album called? What type of music is it? Things like that.
Yeah. So I've toyed around with what names I want to put on there, which I guess I don't know why I think it matters that I put my whole name on there. I guess it's if I ever want to go for future employment, I don't want them to be able to pull this up in a Google search. But I guess I like what you wrote on the NW Hale, and the album would be called Sorrowed Son, which came from a song that's on there called Pray For Me, that just is a lyric that's kind of showed up. And then
to me, that's one of those deep ones.
Yeah, it is. It's sad. That it's sadder than no one. That song in general. My mom's asked me to play it several times. I said, nah, not today.
It's like real heavy, and I'm just trying to eat a bologna sandwich right now.
Yeah, we got a lot of stuff to do the rest of the day. It's 10 a.m.
I'm not trying to cry.
Yeah, I'm not going to play this song right now. But it's a lyric that popped up because I think we had been talking about. We must have been talking. Yeah, because that must have been one of the later songs. Because I remember what you were talking about.
One of the. You sent me that as maybe the last one or maybe the second to last one or something.
And because we were talking about album titles, and I was like, ooh, these two words just showed up out of nowhere. So we're just going to go with it. And then, like, I searched around, and I don't even think the word sorrowed is a word.
That's the amazing thing.
Nothing else is. And I mean, it sounded like something that it would exist, and it didn't.
Sounds like a Russell Kelly album.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I figured somebody in the 60s would have done something like that. But yeah, M.W. Hale, Sorrowed Son. It's alt country, Americana, I guess, is what it's labeled as. I mean, there's in my mind, there's
which leaves a lot to be do whatever you want.
There's Sturgler songs, there's Childress songs, there's Priner songs, Cody Jinks' songs. You know, I keep saying ish because I definitely don't want to compare the two. Just if you're looking for a sound in
just
your
like an homage,
if you're looking for a sound in your head of wondering what it's going to sound like, you know, take that and cover up one of the speakers, I guess, or something.
Yeah.
And, so that'll give you an idea.
And yeah, you said there's Springsteen-ish references. For me, production-wise, I'm definitely looking at Sturgill's first album.
Mm-hmm.
I really like a lot of the Jason Isbell tones. I think once I get more into the deep mixing and mastering, I'm going to get towards that. And then I like a lot of like singer-songwriter-y stuff too. So like City and Colors, like I really, some of his Bring Me Your Love album, like to me is like the keyboards and everything. I mean, it's just like it all blends and it's this wall of sound that's really good. So those are it for me. But yeah, we're hoping to crank this out. So this episode will come out on what, the 5th or something. And the plan is, if we can make it happen, it's Halloween. So we're going to thread the needle a little bit. But, you know, the podcast is taking a break, so I won't have that. Other life stuff will be chilling out. So, yeah, we'll do that.
Yeah, but no, I'm excited. I appreciate all the work that you've put into this. If I can convince you to do it again for these next songs, it's going to be an acoustic album where we're just going to have a guitar and a microphone.
If you buy me a pedal or something, we'll call it even. So where do you want people to find stuff for the album? And where, I know we're still ahead of promoting some of those things, but where do you want people to follow while, you know, if they are interested, you know, seven people listening care. No. You know, I'm kidding.
But. I had been, you know, sharing stuff on my Instagram story, but I don't think I'm going to do, you know, I'm going to try to focus on this Instagram that we put together.
It's at
Sorrowed Son. At Sorrowed
Son, S-O-R-R-O-W-E-D. That's the Rustin Kelly vibe too. Crowmaster, man. I like it.
Yeah, just go by, you know, if we ever.
Sorrow E-D Son, S-O-N.
S-O-N.
All together.
Yep, all one word.
That'll be in the show notes.
Yeah, and so if we ever, you know. Once all 10,000 of you listeners download this album and we've become famous,
all 10,000.
We're gonna be Matthew Hale and the Sorrowed Sons on tour, and so. But
hashtag quit the day job.
Hell yeah, that's what Taryn asked earlier. She goes, "How serious you think?" I said, "We have enough people listening to this. I'm quitting my job. Don't
please,
you?
Please help me. I'm poor.
Please help me. I'm poor." I was like, "You guys don't have to worry about that."
That's cool.
But yeah.
And we'll have, you know, big release to all the major platforms.
Yep.
We'll
get it on Apple and Spotify for sure. At least in my mind.
Yeah, Bandcamp and stuff like that. Cool. Well, that sounds good, bro. Well, lastly, why do you encourage people, or why do you think it's important that we make more music?
I think, to me, And really, especially in recent years, music is wildly important. It's everything. For me, it's kind of taken over sports. I don't really focus that much on, I mean, I still watch sports, but it's not really something
COVID has taken my desire to care about sports.
Yeah. I don't really delve a lot of energy. Like when my teams lose, I'm kind of like, I would wish they would have won. but
that's exactly how I feel now, dude.
But, and you know, I'll still go to games and stuff.
Easy when you're eventually a Magic fan too, though.
Yeah. Right. But, let's hit my tooth on your microphone. But, it's just always there, and there's always a story to tell, and there's always new things to find in songs. Like, you go back and listen, and you're like, oh, I didn't know he was writing about that. And I'm always fascinated with lyrics. I've recently learned that people don't listen to lyrics of songs.
I don't listen as much.
Oh, that's all I do.
It's not my first thing I'm paying attention to.
Well, the first thing I want to hear about is if I can get through the song, if I like the sounds of it. And then secondly, I'll go back through. Like Arlo McKinley just put out an album. Mm. He's out of Cincinnati. It's a really good album. It's called Die Midwestern. Mm. He's actually the last artist that John Prine signed.
Mm. Oh, yeah, you sent me his thing.
And so it's a really good album. But that's what I did. Went through the first time, listening to just the sounds of it, and then went back through and what he was singing about. And so there's just always a story to tell, and it's music. You know, as a kid, I was always told it was a universal language. You know, everyone listens to it. Like, I listened to Springsteen live in Finland. He doesn't speak Finnish, and I don't know if they know English, but there's still 30,000 people there screaming rocking back, up. You know, everything back to him. So it's just universal, and it always puts me in a good mood. And anytime I find something new, I always enjoy that. I think everybody should make music to try to convert everybody to play instrument if they can, or just figure. Doesn't even matter if you're good. Just pick it up, and
it's good for your brain, even.
Yeah, just start playing. You play forever.
That's good, man. Well, if people enjoyed this chat, they can, you know, keep up with what's going on. We'll have the album coming out hopefully on the 31st. But you will know when it comes out if you follow any of this stuff. And if you enjoyed this episode, we're going to flip the script. And the last episode of the season was a Q&A. So we're going to take all those user submitted questions, all, you know, three of them. No, I'm kidding. There's a handful more than three. And Matt's going to turn it around on me. So, all right, y'all. For Matt and for Chris, everybody remember, give more grace, share more love, and make more music. All right, music makers, I hope you enjoyed that chat with Matt. And if you did, you can find all the info for Sorrowed Son and the album coming out in the show notes. Be sure to follow along. We'll have information coming up about that. And today, don't forget, I have a new music shout-out. Our new music shout-outs today are from the Office Hours Band and from the Drew Sharon Band. They're different. The Office Hours Band is a little bit more indie, rock indie music vibe, and the Drew Sharon Band is a more prog rock influence band. So they both just came out. The links below in the show notes will send you right to that if you enjoy them. But they're both my friends, so go show them some love, give them some support, and remember, everybody, give more grace, share more love, and make more music.
attention.